Coming up on Fronteras, any immigration bill to pass through Congress will have some measure of increased border surveillance written into it, and that doesn't sit well with people already fed up with current levels of federal scrutiny.
I spend the morning building fences, putting things back, gathering up my cows, putting the horses where they need to be. And all the while, I've got Border Patrol and the sheriff parked on the hill, watching me with glasses, treating me like I am the bad guy.
A look at how the government watches border residents in the name of national security. And as Congress members begin their August break, many will be getting an earful from constituents about immigration reform.
We don't have a broken immigration system. We have a broken law enforcement system.
A look at one congressman whose political future may be tied up with the issue. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations and funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. A new U.S. Census report shows a growing number of U.S. residents speak a language at home other than English. But as David Martin Davies reports, the level of English proficiency in the nation is holding steady.
The report breaks down the number of people in the nation who speak a language other than English and also their ability to speak English. 58% of the U.S. residents who spoke a foreign language at home also speak English very well. And the people who speak English less than very well remain the same from 2007 to 2011 at 8.7%. More people are speaking non-English. That rose from 20% in 2007 to 21% in 2011. And almost two-thirds spoke Spanish. The South Texas border city of Laredo led all metro areas with 92% of the residents speaking a language other than English at home. David Martin Davies reporting.
Immigration reform is going to be a hot topic during the congressional August break, especially here in the Southwest. Changing demographics mean a rapidly changing constituency for many legislators. Some Republicans will be facing tough choices on how to respond to their demands. From our Fronteras desk, Jill Replegal profiles one California district where a Republican congressman finds himself in the hot seat.
Congressman Gary Miller. Over 50% of the voters in your 31st district are Latino and Asian American immigrants.
About 75 people held a rally on a recent Friday outside House Republican Gary Miller's office in Rancho Cucamonga, about 45 minutes east of downtown Los Angeles. They presented Miller's office with close to 2,000 signatures from voters and supporters of comprehensive immigration reform, including a path to citizenship for people in the country illegally. A smaller group, around 25 people, stood on the sidewalk and grass just outside the rally, carrying signs reading "Hire Americans" and "Stop Illegal Immigration," and breaking out occasionally in patriotic verse. Robin Fidston was in this second group.
We don't have a broken immigration system. We have a broken law enforcement system. And we believe that the focus of our congressman should be on Americans.
Miller, like all House representatives, is up for re-election next year. Political analysts and pro-immigration reform groups have identified him as susceptible to softening his thus far hard-line stance on immigration issues. Some of Miller's opponents are already playing up his record with an eye toward unseating him in the 2014 election. Here's an ad recently run on Spanish language television, paid for by House Majority PAC, a super PAC aligned with the Democratic Party.
8 million
the ad notes that Miller voted against the DREAM Act, the bill that would have granted legal status to young people brought here by their parents illegally as children. And it highlights Miller's recent vote in favor of resuming deportations of DREAMers. With that record, the ad ends, Miller is the one who should go.
Gary Miller es quien debería irse.
Back home, Miller faces a diverse constituency. The 31st District is a mix of well-to-do bedroom communities and hardscrabble towns stretched out along the I-10 highway in Southern California's Inland Empire. Miller's support base comes mostly from the higher end of the economic scale here, from people like John and Linda Rodriguez. I met them at a well-manicured park where they were helping their church run a summer camp. The couple was manning a table outside the park bathroom.
Paper towel or seat cover?
They're longtime residents of Rancho Cucamonga. Both identify themselves as conservative, and though both are of Mexican heritage, they worry that giving a break to people in the country illegally will encourage more people to come.
In another 20 or 30, is it going to happen again? And then in another 20 or 30, it's going to happen again? It just seems like there should be... This is it.
But Miller's constituents of the future, the ones he needs to win over if he hopes to keep his seat, are younger, and many come from recent immigrant families, people like Sandra Gonzalez and her two voting-age children.
Hey, and now auto body and paint.
Gonzalez and her husband run an auto body shop that pulls in $500,000 a year. They both originally came to the U.S. illegally, but were allowed to stay here under the 1986 amnesty. Gonzalez became a citizen 3 years ago. I asked her if she voted in the last election.
I did, and I'm always going to be using my vote because I know that's my power, the way to show that we are here.
Gonzalez was at the recent protest in front of Congressman Miller's office, advocating for immigration reform on behalf of the local Catholic Church. She talked to some of the counter-protesters, and she thinks their concerns are not actually that far apart.
I don't want my people cross illegally to this country. I don't want people that is illegal break the law and come here and work. That's why we need to change laws.
Congressman Miller didn't give an interview for this story, but his views echo the Republican Party line. A spokesman for Miller says the congressman's top concerns are preserving jobs for American workers and securing the borders. But he wants to hear out all sides. If Sandra Gonzalez is right and Congressman Miller's most vocal constituents can come to agree on at least some aspects of immigration reform, maybe there's some hope that Congress can do the same. Reporting from the Inland Empire, I'm Jill Replogle.
More and more Latinos are going to college. A recent study from the Pew Hispanic Center shows that for the first time, Latinos have surpassed whites in college enrollment numbers, and more than half of these students are enrolled in community colleges. From our Fronteras desk, Kate Sheehy profiles a school in Southern Nevada struggling to meet the needs of its Latino student body.
Carlos Azeta is an academic counselor at a community college called the College of Southern Nevada. He talks with 21-year-old Karen Espinosa, who is upset, and she feels that her 3 years at CSN may have been wasted. Why are you crying? He asks. Espinosa wants to be an immigration lawyer, but is worried she will never make it out of community college to a university. Azeta reminds her of how she has helped support her younger sister, who will soon start college too. He tells her when her sister graduates from college, she'll say, "You showed me how it's done. You bought her Levi's. You bought her backpack. You're doing well. You're on the right path. Don't lose your focus." Espinosa came to the U.S. as a little girl and is now fluent in English, but she says she still chose Azeta from a list of counselors because of his Spanish name.
We just know where we're coming from. We have something in common. He knows how the struggle is. Not everybody sees that, even my own parents. I don't know, I just feel like it's the right person to guide me.
Having the right person to guide a student is critical to their success rate, but Azeta is the only bilingual academic counselor for CSN's nearly 40,000 students.
If Carlos could be multiplying 10, this school would be a complete different thing, but it's not.
Schools like CSN are struggling to find the resources to meet the unique needs of their student bodies. Deborah Santiago is co-founder of the Washington, D.C.-based research institution called Excelencia in Education.
A high concentration of Latinos would be the first in the family to go to college. And I think that's where looking at community colleges as an affordable option for them is real, so they can get back into the workforce relatively quickly and earn an income and support themselves and their family.
But community colleges across the country have to find ways and funds to keep Latino students in school. Last year, 21% of Latinos earned an associate's degree or higher, compared to 40% of all adults. CSN is among the top five largest community colleges in the country. Almost 25% of the student body here is Latino, a demographic that puts them in the running to qualify for federal funds designated for so-called Hispanic-serving institutions. Clarissa Cota is the chair of the task force at CSN that is making sure the school can qualify for those funds.
Are we servicing all of their needs? No, we are not. Could we do a better job of it? Yes, we could.
The college has fallen behind over the last 5 years after budget cuts of over $23 million. But this year, they'll get a small boost of nearly $5 million. And Cota says some of that money will be put towards preparing their Latino students.
We need to get them to be college literate, being aware of what financial aid opportunities they may have. How do you actually register for classes? What is a proper major for them to be choosing?
But qualifying for federal subsidies as a Hispanic-serving institution will still be critical for CSN, and competition for those funds has become fierce. In a little less than 20 years, the number of colleges with a large Latino population has more than doubled across the country.
O sea, te complica con lo del camión.
Sí.
Perfecto.
It's not just finding the money, it's turning it into effective resources that is also a challenge. In his 14 years at the college, Carlos Azeta has seen many counselors come and go. Maybe the job is too demanding, but Azeta says he would like to see the college offer incentives for hiring bilingual staff.
We need people that really care. We need people that speak the language. We know people that are culturally sensitive. And even if you don't speak the language and you're culturally sensitive, that's all we need.
At the end of the day, students remain waiting outside Azeta's office. It's about 4 p.m., and as an afterthought, he looks up at the clock and says, "I missed lunch." He shrugs his shoulders and goes to meet his next student. In Las Vegas, I'm Kate Sheehy.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. We're hearing a lot about the prospects for increased border surveillance. That doesn't sit well with people already fed up with current levels of federal scrutiny.
I spend the morning building fences, putting things back, gathering up my cows, putting the horses where they need to be. And all the while, I've got Border Patrol and the sheriff parked on the hill watching me with glasses, treating me like I am the bad guy.
How the government watches border residents in the name of national security. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. Any immigration reform bill is likely to include plans to boost security along the southwest border. Proposals on the table include more drones, more cameras, more boots on the ground. Fronteras desk correspondent Michelle Marisco looks at the state of surveillance along the border now and how it could change.
Jim McManus's farm sits about 25 miles north of Mexico in the small town of Aravaca, Arizona. Pigs and chickens and peacocks run around in their pens. The air is pungent with the musky smell of his goats. McManus grew up in southern Arizona. He's seen the changes to border law enforcement. Mostly, he's noticed that it doesn't sit on the actual border. It's all around him. He points at a hill north of his property.
I spend the morning building fences, putting things back, gathering up my cows, putting the horses where they need to be. And all the while, I've got Border Patrol and the sheriff parked on the hill watching me with glasses, treating me like I am the bad guy.
Mexico's half an hour away, but this region is already under a level of federal surveillance seen nowhere else in the country. Driving his kids to school to a nearby town means McManus passes through two federal checkpoints where he's briefly questioned and 11 highway cameras monitored by federal drug agents. Add to that the drones, surveillance planes, and helicopters that regularly patrol the skies above southern Arizona, and it creates a lot of watchful eyes.
If you conduct business here, you live here, you're always being watched, you're always being stopped, and you're treated as if you're a criminal until you can prove to them that you are not a criminal and that you're a legitimate business persons.
In the Senate's border security proposal, a compromise was reached. The Senate agreed to limit border drones to just 3 miles of California's border. Not so for southern Arizona or South Texas or New Mexico. In those states, those drones can fly up to 100 miles inland.
And there's just not enough of us in the rest of this border region to be significant in the decision-making on this.
It's all part of a plan aimed at achieving 24/7 border surveillance.
Good,
yeah. You're a United States citizen, sir?
Yes, I am.
I drive through a Border Patrol checkpoint and down to the village of Tubac, where Terry Kirkpatrick lives. He's a former Immigration and Customs Enforcement official, and he's skeptical that flooding this area with more agents will deter organized crime. He lays out all the border law enforcement that are already here.
Oh, it's astronomical.
He lists 2,000 federal agents just here in this part of southern Arizona. Then two county sheriff departments and more local police from inside Arizona. Then the military and sometimes the National Guard. His real concern, drug trafficking.
Something's not working. There's something broken with this whole system that we have that much manpower, that much surveillance in Santa Cruz County, which is the smallest county in Arizona, and we're not able to stem anything.
Most civil rights organizations concede that the federal government has the right to surveillance within a certain distance of the border. But the quest for a secure border gets close to crossing the line. And sometimes privacy advocates say it oversteps. Jennifer Lynch is with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. The group found Homeland Security isn't just monitoring the highways and ports of entry, but are also recording people's movements in the larger border region, whether or not they even cross into Mexico.
And then they're sharing that data with state and local law enforcement agencies as well. So we've seen this down in San Diego, where the Border Patrol agents down there are collecting license plate data and sharing it with a regional database.
Supporters of the Senate's so-called Border Surge Amendment to beef up security believe it's a necessary compromise to pass immigration reform. Here's Senator John McCain on CNN.
We'll be the most militarized border since the fall of the Berlin Wall. So,
and all that right in Jim McManus's front yard. In Aravaca, I'm Michel Marisco.
You haven't seen poverty in America until you visited the Navajo Nation, a reservation overwhelmed by desperate housing needs, high unemployment, and contaminated drinking water. But one corner of the reservation, about 1.5 million acres, is even worse off because of something known as the Bennett Freeze. Here, about 8,000 Navajo people have lived paralyzed in a state of poverty, extreme even by Navajo standards. From the Changing America desk in Flagstaff, Laurel Morales reports.
Don Yellowman is my guide today. The tall former football player is head of a group called Forgotten People. His aim is to bring attention to the thousands of people forgotten for four decades under a program that banned all development on their land. We drive for hours down a long dirt road to a home constructed out of old ammunition cans and plywood, surrounded by stray sheep and dogs.
All right, I think they're home.
Got it. Your Mustang.
Carol and Charlie Colorado invite us in.
She is Carol Colorado and she.
Charlie Colorado and she.
Inside the two-room house, a home sweet home sign hangs on the wall. But life hasn't always been sweet for the elderly couple who speak only Navajo. Carol recalls trying to put up a shade structure next to their home many years ago.
They were told you can't build that. So that was illegal construction. And that's what we often hear from people. An outhouse would get a sticker stuck on there called illegal construction.
In 1966, Robert Bennett, the Commissioner of Indian Affairs, outlawed construction of any kind on 1.5 acres in northeastern Arizona. This was his solution to a land dispute between the Navajo and Hopi tribes. The freeze was lifted in 2009, but many people are still waiting on new homes, water, and electricity promised to them. Jeremiah Sage Curley and his family are beyond frustrated. Curley is an artist who frequently paints the rolling hills and red mesas near his family's home. A row of giant steel towers obstruct the view.
My brother always says, don't forget the power lines, you know, which is to say, it's here. It's just streaming the electricity past us. We don't have any electricity.
The towers transmit power down to Phoenix and remind Curley every day of what he and his family don't have. More than 40% of the homes here don't have electricity. That's compared to 10% on the entire reservation, according to a study commissioned by the federal government. And many still lack access to water. Curly's mom, who is out hauling water now, has been trying to get a new home for years to replace their small, crumbling stone house. But the Navajo housing officials told her they lost her paperwork.
But her heart's always been, the Navajo Shogun has limoshi, which means when I get a home. That's the way she speaks, and my heart does go out for her because, sorry to say this, I don't think nothing's going to get done, you know.
According to a study commissioned by the tribe in 2011, there's $4 billion in unmet need just in the former Bennett Freeze area. Ernie Zah, spokesman for Navajo President Ben Shelley, says much of the federal money earmarked for Bennett Freeze families is tied up in tribal policy red tape.
Ideally, you know, we could just write them a check. Reality is we need to hold the money accountable.
Many people have been forced to leave, but tradition ties Navajos to their land. Cecilia Brown almost gave up and moved to Phoenix, but then something good happened. She spent 20 years filling out paperwork and making endless visits to the Navajo Housing Authority.
I just stuck to it. I said, I'll wait.
Finally, the ban on development lifted, and just a couple months ago, she got the call.
They called me and they said, your house is ready. We have your key. When are you available to pick it up? I'm like, really? You're serious? And I said, now, I'm good right now, you know, and we do have power, we have electricity, and we do have water, so we have everything.
But Cecilia Brown is only one of thousands in need of a home. The others must continue to wait. I'm Laurel Morales in Flagstaff.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversation and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is fronterasdesk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.